Hello and welcome to the Outlander Sassnack Fan Podcast. I'm Ajlene.
And I'm Gracie.
And it's just a podcast where we talk about what's going on with Outlander and all the stuff throughout the week, maybe, whatever. That's how it works.
Yeah. And today we are discussing episode 7 of season 2, which is titled Faith, and it was written by Tony Graffia. And I don't think you're going to get a lot of laughs this episode.
No. I do want to make a quick mention because today is an anniversary. It's our 2-year anniversary when Gracie came up with the amazing idea of starting our Tumblr blog.
Yep, sure did. And here we are, 2 years and over 15,000 followers later. God, do you remember when we were so excited at the idea that we had 100?
Oh, like, my God. Yeah, I was excited when we got 30 followers. Like, I remember the 301 going, oh, my God, 30 people are watching our stuff.
30 people, and now it's like 15,000, and I can't even contemplate that many people listening to what we have to say or reading what we say.
Ain't no thing.
Oh, man. So you guys are amazing. Shout out
to everybody.
Yes, yeah. All those from the beginning to now, we appreciate it. We really do. I'm so glad that we have a huge community of people that love Outlander as much as we do.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's amazing knowing that so many people love it as we do. So, okay, now to the episode, which it was a rough one.
Yeah. It was bad. There really wasn't any good funny bits, and it's like it was super heavy. Like, I told my guy friend about it, and before he even watched the episode, because I watched it before him, I was like, dude, I promise you, like, it's rough. And he finished watching the episode, and he was like, man, I'm gonna need a couple beers after that one. Get hammered.
Yeah, well, you, Gracie, had watched it before I did, and she's like, hopefully you'll be okay, but there's, you know, a part at the beginning where there might be a problem with your blood phobia, because it's something that I deal with, which I was fine, but still pretty brutal. So yeah. The episode starts off kind of different.
Very hazy. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, it starts off with her kind of, you know, coming in and out of consciousness.
No. Remember, it was them in Boston.
Well, yeah, I thought it was she was going in and out of consciousness, and then it kind of went off to where it focused on Boston in the 50s.
I thought it was herrings, and then...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it starts off, you see Claire's face first, and then it kind of goes off like she's having a dream, and then it focuses on the blue heron and brings us back to the 1700s.
Oh, okay. So...
Yeah. But, yeah, so we go into the future and we say little Brianna.
Yeah, which, she's so cute.
She is. I guess the reason they did that is to give us, you know, a little glimmer of hope, you know, considering that we know that she's miscarrying. You know, it's for, like, show watchers, I suppose. Even book readers. You know, I guess it was kind of like a way of them, you know, letting us know that even though there's this horrible thing that's happened, Claire eventually does get pregnant and have Jamie's child, you know, and it's a healthy, beautiful little girl. So, you know, gives you a little glimmer of hope in all this horrible, horrible sorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then, it kind of goes, into that hazy dream again where, you're seeing quick glimpses of what's happening, but, kind of, I think kind of from Claire's perspective in a way, you know, that because she doesn't really know what's going on. And, you know, like, we know what's going on, but it's so chaotic and, you know.
Yeah, and then that, you know, over scene where it's over the whole, you know, and you see all the blood and her legs split open and... Oh man, it was bad. I mean, I don't know how to make this any, you know, I don't know how to make this funny.
No, it's not, I mean,
happen.
Miscarriages are not funny.
Yeah, see, I'm not a mother, so I don't know what it's like to have a mother's love for a child, or, you know, I've never been pregnant. I've really never been in a super long-term relationship with anyone that I wanted to have kids with. So I don't really, I mean... For someone that's not a mother, it's hard for me to understand what it's like for a mother to lose her child. And I think what this episode did was really show that grief and that all those layers that Claire goes through.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it was a really poignant episode. And I think that, you know, women that have lost children maybe saw something of themselves in Claire, because miscarriages are really common. I know it's not something that you really talk about, but from the statistics I know, it's like 1 in every 4 pregnancies.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know that because it's not something that's really talked about. And
well,
so...
no, because there's this sense of, there's a sense of shame behind it, like that they weren't able to. And also there's a loss, like, because it is, it's still there. And I mean, we could even get kind of political with this, but it's not an easy thing to go through because, you know, you start envisioning, I assume, I mean, again, I've never had a child, but I assume when you're about to have a child, you start envisioning yourself as a mother, going through all these months and, you know, what this child's going to look like and, you know, those tired nights, what that's going to be like. And, you know, I mean, obviously you might romanticize it a little bit, but you're still thinking about this. You have 9 months since, you know, essentially to think about, you know, becoming a mother, and it's almost surreal until it happens, right? And for somebody who loses their child, that connection, you know, is kind of, you never had that chance of, you know, being the mother, and you feel almost like you're a failure. Like, how could, you know, this happen to me? Why me? Right. And
yeah,
I think that it's traumatic in a way because, you know, it is a sense of loss, and it's, you know, despite the child having technically not been born, it's still
part of you and part of the man you love, or, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a potential life that never got to be. Like, I mean, I actually have, when I was little, I had a friend, and his name was Timmy, and he ended up, dying when he was 7 years old. And my mom was really best friends with his mom. And after it happened, like, Shannon, she went through a whole thing of where she was basically going through, I'll never get to see him do this. I'll never get to see him do that. I'll never get to see him do this. You know, and I think that's sort of similar to what happens to women who have miscarriages or, you know, stillbirths, where they go through, you know, if he or she had lived, you know, I would have been able to see this happen or this, and now it won't. I feel robbed, that kind of thing.
My grandmother lost one of her children when... he died when my mom was about 3 years old, so she doesn't really remember him because he was 6 and he got hit by a car. And my grandmother's pretty closed off about it, but she still remembers and celebrates his birthday, and Sorry, I'm getting teared up because, you know, it's something that always, you know, stuck with my mom as she was growing up. And we still go visit the graves sometimes, you know, because my grandmother, you know, like, still has that loss. I mean, it was her only boy. And, you know, it's... I like to think, well, you know, I kind of imagine, like, what if, you know, my Uncle Leonard had survived and, you know, beyond the age of six, like, what kind of person would he be? And, yeah, so it's...
I mean, I guess even though neither one of us are mothers, we can kind of understand that loss, but I don't think we'll ever really understand it unless something like that happens to us.
No.
And I think the episode really does respect for women that have lost children in one form or another, even if it wasn't like a pregnancy or, you know, if it was a grown child or, you know, something like that. Like, I mean, we're not mothers, so we can't understand that deep love that mothers have for
their
children.
But we can have empathy for those who have suffered that.
Exactly. And I think this episode was so fantastically done mm-hmm. for that kind of grief.
I think in a way, the whole series does really break boundaries of things that we don't normally talk about because, and it really does open up that conversation.
Yeah, I read an article last night or this morning about how Outlander is so unusual compared to other TV shows in that it focuses on things and doesn't turn tragedy into a cheap plot point. You know, yeah. Like in a lot of shows, if someone gets raped or if someone loses somebody, you know, they don't really focus on that too long, you know, and they move on to the next plot point. And with Outlander, you saw with Jamie, it took, you know, 4 episodes for him to be able to overcome what had happened to him. I mean, not even really overcome it, but, you know.
To get to a point where, you know, like, they were able to talk about it. Like, it's not just like, yeah. Okay, this happened. We need to, you know, talk about it right now and get, you know, get it handled and done with. Like, they kind of go through the...
It's really good character study is what I'd like to call it. It's a good character study, you know? Like, they focus on the horrible bits of life, but they make it so human and it doesn't feel artificial, you know? And then, like, the same with what happens this episode. I mean, the whole episode really does, I mean, except for, like, 10 minutes, well, 10, 15 minutes of it really just focuses on the repercussions of Claire losing her child, you know?
Yeah.
That's what most of this episode deals with.
Yeah.
And coming to grips with that, you know?
Yeah. It was heavy. Like, I mean, and the part where, you know, it kind of, you know, it does a lot of switches and stuff, but, you know, she wakes up and she's wondering where her baby is, right? And
oh my God, I was already crying at that point. God, like, yeah. I cried a lot. This is the first episode that made me cry, actually, you know.
Same here.
Wentworth and To Ransom a Man's Soul did not make me cry. I mean, I was pretty torn up about it, but I didn't cry. I was literally, like, there were tears in a tissue box.
Yeah, I mean, like, remember how long it took me to actually watch the last 2 episodes? It took me...
You basically watched them, like, a month before the new season started.
Yeah, and it's because I did not feel ready, and it actually wasn't... I mean, it was still bad, but it wasn't as bad as I thought, you know? So with this one, it was just... It was rough, and...
It was rougher for me watching it than it was for me reading it. Like, but, reading it, I was fine. Watching it, I was a bowl of tears. I was just... You know, it's just like we harken back to what Jamie says in the first book, first season. You know, there's a big difference between knowing something and seeing it, you know? And I feel like that really, that quote works a lot when it's talking about this book adaptation. Like, you know, so reading it, I was fine, but watching it come to life was just too much. I watched it yesterday. I've only watched it one time. I cannot watch it again. No. Because I watched it yesterday morning, which was probably a bad idea because I ended up being pretty, like, depressed, I guess is the word, all day yesterday. Like, it was so sad and there was really no let up. So.
But there was a lot of good.
There was some good that happened.
Well, not just that, but like I found that Mother Hildegard, her way of, you know, trying to comfort Claire was really good, and then also Sister Angelique. But there was also the very potent, you know, moment where, you know, they say like Mary the Virgin, you know, Mother was like watching, and then, you know, she ends up like I believe it was an accident, you know, and then Mary cracks.
Yeah, she didn't swipe it floor on purpose, but it was very good visual.
Yeah, like, I mean, this, you know, this like episode
her
was...
Her faith was broken in that moment, just like the Virgin Mary's statue, you know?
Her faith was broken?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know. Sorry. You know, like her actual faith, not her baby.
I'm sorry. I'm going to hell right now. Okay, so, and also Mother Hildegard.
We do have to make some terrible jokes because right now the mood is just so bad.
Welcome to my life. I'm horrible. Okay, so.
But yeah, Mother Hildegard, you know.
Baptize.
Yeah, did tell Claire, you know, like, you're not supposed to do that. If a baby is born, stillborn, then it's not supposed to be baptized or buried on on hallowed ground. But Mother Hildegard said that she baptized her just so faith could be buried properly. Yeah.
So then after,
if you're lighthearted and fun, then it ain't gonna happen.
Oh my god, you keep.
I'm never letting that go, especially after this episode.
No, I mean, it's definitely not lighthearted or fun. You need to like find out the next time she writes.
I can't remember the name of her. I'm gonna have to go back Google it and look at the article.
Google it. Okay. So
the name of the article was like Outlander has a rape problem or something. Yeah.
Was it a Jezebel article? Oh, I went there. Fucking Jezebel.
But yeah, so Claire ends up having a fever, and so the priest is brought in for her last rites. And at this point, we are, you know, pretty worried about Claire, but then there's a ray of light, of hope. And who is it?
Master Raymond.
Oh, thank God. Some relief.
Yeah, because she mentions that the reason why she was having a fever is because the placenta was still in her body, which...
all kinds of issues.
Yeah, so there's that can't happen.
It was basically childbed fever.
Yeah.
But yeah, Master Raymond comes in and he starts healing her, and it was just the weirdest thing. Like, he's definitely a man with a magic touch. So but he mentions to her that the reason that he calls her Madonna is because of her blue aura, so much like the cloak of Mary, you know?
Well, yeah, because the part where he said, like, what are you envisioning? And she was like, blue wings. And he said that the color blue is a color of healing. So,
yeah. Which, I don't know that much about auras or anything like that, so.
I don't know. It's like healing crystals, maybe.
But he ends up, getting that piece of placenta out of her that was causing her to fever, and then escapes afterwards because Louis is out for blood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mother Hildegard, like, thank God, it's a miracle, you know.
Well, yeah, well, because Claire does say to him, why are you risking this for me? And he's like, these are the things you do for friends. And it's like you said that Mother Hildegard, you know, comes and they think it's a miracle and stuff. And then they, or no, Sister Angelique goes to get Mother Hildegard.
Oh, well, whatever. Mother Hildegard ends up there.
Yeah.
And then Claire admits to her that, you know, she blames Jamie for losing her baby. And,
'cause Jamie betrayed her.
Yeah, she feels like Jamie betrayed her. And we don't know the reason why. But she ended up staying in the hospital for a long time and until Fergus begged her to come back home. And, then...
Oh, God, this
part that made us cry.
No, this part is the part that just, because all before, like, very, you know, they were all very sad points. But this part when she's, you know, the carriage is coming and it's got, I mean, there was music, right? But anyways, there was.
Bear McCreary deserves a composition award because. Yeah. That sad music plays, like, almost the whole episode.
Yeah.
The tone.
Now, this moment was what got me, because she's returning and you can see all the servants are very somber because they definitely know what happened. She doesn't have her child. And, you know, when Suzette comes and, you know, holds her hand and, you know, says, you know, I'm so sorry. And then when she gets to the end of the, you know, procession and she holds...
Hold on, what's his name?
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but she holds the steward's hand, and he, you know, she thanks him for, I guess, for his empathy, because, like, everybody, you know, there is a lot of, you know, sympathy there for her, but it's not...
His name's Magnus, by the
way. Okay, Magnus. But it's not pitiful.
Magnus' hand.
But they're not really. I can't say that they're pitying her. They're just, there's a lot of sympathy because it's almost like she is. Do you get kind of what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like they're all grieving the loss of the child, even though they didn't know it, because I guess they saw that how much Claire and Jamie were looking forward to having that baby, and then to know that, you know, she lost her husband's in prison, you know, and she lost her baby. It's a lot. And when she reaches out and takes Magnus's hand and clutches it, and you can tell he's not used to that kind of thing, because back then, like, you know, aristocrats didn't, you know, I mean, even if you've seen Downton Abbey, you know, aristocrats don't really talk to their servants or, you know, really humanize them that much.
And this was a potent moment where, you know, there is that human connection.
Yeah, when she clutches his hand, it's like, you know, she... Oh, man, God, this episode was so rough.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
We need some good news.
Yeah, well...
There's not any coming yet.
No. No, it's not, okay? Because we're about to dive deep into even a worse point.
Yeah, I mean, oh, man. So, she's home, she's recovering, and Fergus has just been the most amazing little boy. And
he's brushing her hair.
Yeah, he ends up leaving and going to bed, and she, you know, she looks at the christening spoons, and I think she falls asleep first, and then she wakes up because she can't sleep, and she's just so overcome with grief and loss. And then she sees the christening spoons, and she tosses them.
In anger.
Then she leaves her room, and she's walking down the hall crying, and then she hears someone else crying, and it's Fergus.
Yes, so she goes to check what happened, and he says that he is having a nightmare, and that it's all his fault, the reason why Jamie had, you know, dueled and had to go to the Bastille. And he reveals that...
it's not just a nightmare, it's what really happened.
Yeah, and that's when we go back to...
what happened at Madame Elise's.
Yes. And,
this scene was another super hard scene to get through.
Yeah.
It's probably more graphic than what we normally see as far as sexual abuse of children in shows. But at the same time, it's not super graphic. It's heavily implied. You don't really see,
I mean, they Black don't,
Jack.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see Blackjack and Fergus in the same screen together with Blackjack on top of him. You see Fergus screaming and crying, and you see Blackjack making faces.
Yeah. And it's
so bad. I can't, you know, there's nothing really to alleviate, you know.
No, it's just...
It's really bad. And then Jamie comes in and sees it, and Jamie loses his shit, as he should.
Yeah.
You know. There was some controversy as to whether it was too graphic. I don't personally think it was.
I think for the context of what happened... I think they did the best
they could without going too far.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have left it out, but, you know.
Well, I think
at the same time, it was probably one of those necessary things where you really understood why Jamie was so, you know, lost his shit. Like, he really just loses it.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, from our expressions and our moments of stumbling over, you know, the scene and like the last couple of scenes, this is a rough episode for anybody who's watched it. It's just brutal.
Yeah, I'm sorry I'm laughing. I'm just like trying to relieve some of the, just like, it's just so draining going over it all over again, because this episode was just so emotionally draining as a whole.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, God, man, I got an awkward laugh a little bit to kind of alleviate some of this, because, oh man, I could cry again. That's how good of an episode and how awful all this stuff was.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I mean, if they're not getting a friggin' Emmy this year.
I swear,
like,
to God,
what?
If Katrina Balfe, especially for this episode, if she doesn't get an Emmy nomination, I'm going to lose my shit.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing with Outlander. Like,
no,
it's so...
way.
Well, that's the thing with Outlander. There's no... like, I don't see, I feel like people don't talk about
it on television.
Yeah, but people aren't talking about it more. You know what I mean? Like, all I ever, okay, with being in radio, I see everything. I'm always looking for stories to talk about on the radio, and sometimes I do talk about Outlander, but where they are talking about stuff about Game of Thrones all the friggin' time, there is nothing about Outlander. Like, there's almost fringe articles, you know.
Yeah,
on, like,
the only places I really see that talk about Outlander are E! Network and Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
Those are really the two outlets that are, you know, mainstream that talk about Outlander the most.
Yeah.
I don't really see it from anywhere
else. I don't see it on BuzzFeed.
The Nerdist does it sometimes, but, you know.
Well, I don't see it on BuzzFeed ever. I don't see it, like, sometimes.
There's, like, five Outlander articles on BuzzFeed.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I mean, first of all, BuzzFeed is not exactly, like, you know, professional journalism.
It's not hard-hitting news, but still.
No, but, I mean, like all the articles on BuzzFeed about Outlander are about guys in kilts, which provided we all love, but there's a lot more important things to be talking about when it comes to this show. The show is opening up conversations that, you know, need to be talked about.
Yeah, like I said, it's super groundbreaking, and it still amazes me that Katrina really doesn't have any acting experience before this.
Well, exactly, and she is doing really good. She just got into
this episode.
Yeah.
Especially with this episode, she carried this episode like a boss. I mean, there's just...
Yeah.
If she doesn't get an Emmy nomination, this is the worst crime ever committed against an actress.
You're gonna riot.
Holy... I'm serious. This is, it would be ridiculous. Like they should have given Sam Heughan, a Golden Globe nomination last year, and an Emmy nomination last year. They better fucking do it this year with Katrina. I know Katrina got a Golden Globe nomination last year. I see her getting another one this year, and I definitely see an Emmy one.
Yeah, I mean, this is
episode that they should screen for those awards.
Yeah, this is the episode, exactly. Getting back on topic, sort of.
Fergus reveals everything, and so Clara goes to Mother Hildegard, now understanding what happened, and Mother Hildegard's like, yeah, sure, I'll help you get an audience with the king.
But there's a price.
Yeah.
Which is strange coming from a nun, right? But, like, she knows the aristocracy.
She's a very worldly woman. She knows what's up.
Well, also, you know, isn't she a daughter of,
She was the goddaughter of Louis XIV.
Yeah, so she knows the aristocracy. Yeah. I said that wrong. Whatever. Aristocracy. Sorry.
Thanks for the laugh. I needed it.
Yeah.
But Claire says, you know, I've already lost my child, I think. What's my virtue? Something like that. So she goes all dressed up to visit with the king. And this was a very interesting... This is the least heavy part of the whole episode.
Yeah, it is. Because, she goes...
Finally, we can talk about something that isn't super depressing.
Yeah. So, she goes to speak with the king and, or the audience with the king in Versailles. And, you know, it's obviously about, you know, I guess pardoning her husband, right? And so they're talking, and he says, he's like, come in, I don't bite, you know, so.
He's super creepy.
Yeah, he kind of is.
Like, I loved him for the whole blackjack on your knees thing, but, like, really? He's an entitled, you know...
I don't know, him and Prince Charles alike
are
both
cut
like
from the same cloth.
Yeah.
The only difference is Louis has a French accent that makes it more charming.
Yeah, and slightly creepy.
So
he's like, you know, he's offering her you know, things that are high class. So he's like, have some of this hot chocolate, you know, comes from Mexico.
Back then it wasn't sweetened, so when she drinks it, you can see her face, like, that's a nice little wink and nod to the fact that, you know, hot chocolate back then was not hot chocolate.
Like, no, wasn't it spicy too? Or do they do that now?
I don't know. I think it depends. Like, in Mexico, even way back when, you know, when they did chocolate drinks, there was always spice in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was just more the fact that it was just basically straight cacao. So it was bitter.
Gross.
It was dark chocolate. You know, it was bitter. It was no sugar.
Dark chocolate still has some sugar in there.
There was no sugar in that shit she was drinking.
And then he also offers her an orange, which, you know, is kind of a big deal.
Yes, because oranges were super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh fruit was a delicacy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why everybody got scurvy. And gangrene.
Yeah, so the king, you think that he's going to get, you know, her on the bed or whatever, and then he's like, come with me, and they don't get on the bed, they go into this back room.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange turn, because, honestly, I definitely do not remember this scene at all.
I remembered that the Comte had died, but I didn't remember this scene at all.
No, like, actually, Gracie, before we started the podcast, exactly, actually got the book out and started reading a bit. So then we're like, oh, so it did happen in the books. Cause
it's not one of the major plot points I remember.
No, it was, like, I mean, this is a kind of a big part, but, you know.
Yeah, I know, but it's done much more dramatically in the show than it was in the books, especially with the Comte's reaction and her wearing, like, because in the book, because I just read it, so I know, in the book, she wasn't wearing that poison necklace, you know, poison detector.
That wasn't even in the book at all, was it?
I don't remember it in the book, no.
Get the book out, we'll read the whole thing right here. I'm kidding. No.
But yeah, so, anyway, basically, Master Raymond and the Lecomte Saint-Germain get dragged in, and, Louis is obviously out for blood, and he's pretty sure that these two guys are horrible dark magic sorcerers, and Claire is La Dame Blanche, which means the White Witch, which means she's a good witch. So it's up to her to figure out which one of these men is horrible.
Which one's evil and which one's not. And
or so, if they're both evil.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And at first he offers this one test where, you know, he talks about, you know, well, let's see if we take the serpent out, which one, you know, if it'll bite you, you know, and Claire's like, oh shit, that's a poisonous snake. That shit's gonna hurt. Hey, how about I just, you know,
whip up a concoction, up a
poison, and if the poison, you know, kills you, then you've, you know, like, this whole scene was like 10 minutes long, 10, 15 minutes long, but I feel like, you know,
it felt longer.
It was a lot of,
it felt longer.
It did, but then when you're summarizing it, it really not that much happened. Like, it was just a lot of, you know, tension. Very tense staring.
Yeah, that's true. It was a lot of intense staring.
But yeah, so she hands it to Master Raymond first, and he drinks it, and of course it's bitter cascara. I now know the name of that herb.
Yeah, and so he, like, looks like he's about to get sick, and then he goes on the ground, and he's, like, about to, you know, puke or whatever, right? And holds his stomach, and then he gets up, and he's fine, and, you know, so yeah, then...
still kind of tore up, but he's good. He's alive.
Yeah. So then, you know, he gives the mixture back to Claire, and she holds it, and as she's turning towards the Comte Saint-Germain, her necklace goes black, so that means that there is poison in the drink, and that is because Master Raymond put some poison into the drink while he was hunched over with the sleight of hand, because earlier in the episodes we could tell that there's that point where he did, like, the sleight of hand, so he's very quick that you don't notice it.
He's very good. Very yes. good.
Yeah.
So the Comte
knows he's gonna die.
Yeah, he knows he's gonna die. He's fucking dead. Pissed. He tells her that, you know, she's the devil's witch and she sucks the devil's cock or whatever.
Good lord. That is some vulgar.
I mean, he was mad. But he takes it, swallows his pride, knows he's about to die, but he takes dead. It like a champ. She did mention le disciple or whatever, like that gang of men, but he didn't know what she was talking about legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
So, which he didn't. Wow.
He did. That was He didn't. It's good.
That's a good one. Write that down in the dictionary.
Under Southern talk.
Yes. I will say, spoiler alert, in case you felt kind of bad for the Comte Saint-Germain, Diana Gabaldon did write a post about how she did write a novella, or a short story, I think, something like that. I haven't read it. It's called The Space in Between, where it discusses the fate of the Le Comte Saint-Germain, and, you know, so if
he
you
lives.
Actually want it. It's about that event, so if you want to learn more about that, that's,
Oh,
that's
man, I just spoiled it.
No, you didn't.
Oh, yeah, because you said spoiler alert. So if you feel like you're spoiled by this mention, then you can email us at wedonotcare@gmail.com.
Yeah, so the comp dies, and, Louis looks at Raymond and was like, all right, you can go, but I don't want to see your face in France ever again, so bye-bye.
Bye, Toad Boy.
Yeah. And then Claire thinks, it's all good. We're done. I did my part. And then he's like, there's the method of payment. And he just drags her out of the room and takes her to the bed and, you know...
Boom chicka.
She's like
more like boom. That's it. I'm sorry, there was no boom chicka chicka. There was just the boom.
Seriously, like she was saying how he's known as this great lover or some shit, and he was like that's it.
That's it. Yeah, it's like you said.
She's like, I closed my eyes and thought of England.
Jesus.
It reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie with Richard Chamberlain, called The Slipper and the Rose. It's a Cinderella. It's a
Okay, I have not seen this movie, but you've talked about it so much because
apparently... You have to watch it. I love this movie. But there's this one part where the king, this is what it reminded me of, where the king is talking to the prince, who's played by Richard Chamberlain, and the prince is like, you know, I want to get married for love. And the king's like, princes don't get married for love. And the prince is like, well, what if I don't love her? You know, what if I think she's ugly? And the king goes, just close your eyes and think of Euphrania. So,
oh, God.
So that's what it really harkened back to for
oh,
me.
Oh, no. God. Close your eyes and think of Euphrania. Well, that's pretty much what George IV did with his wife. History jokes, I'm horrible. Okay, so...
Yeah, George IV was horrible. Like, out of all of them, he's only known for being fat.
Yeah, a fat pig by his friend who called him that.
A fat pig that had a lot of extramarital affairs.
Yeah, well, that's because, you know, he devoted his life to whores. Just like Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, they were horny bastards, but we don't talk about that in history class.
No, although the one other thing I know about Benjamin Franklin is he apparently invented the rocking chair, but there's a good chance he didn't actually do that. I don't even know why I know that, but I said it once to a bunch of girls when I was like in grade 7 because I saw it on, you know how classrooms used to have like those, I want to say panels, but they had like, you know, interesting
almost
facts.
Almost like posters on the wall and
yeah,
stuff.
Or like interesting facts. And anyways, mm-hmm. So it was like right there on the wall. And I'm like, did you guys know that Benjamin Franklin invented the rocking chair? And they all looked at me because they were talking about boys and stuff. And I'm like, it says it right there. And they're like, oh. And that's when everybody realized I was a weirdo. So that was a bit of a side note.
it's cool. But yeah, so it's a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, without the wham. I mean,
or bam.
With everything after. Yeah, it's like there's the wham, but there's no bam or thank you. Like, there really isn't.
Nice David Bowie reference, by the way.
That's a David Bowie reference?
Are you kidding me? Come on,
I
Gracie.
I didn't know that.
It's from Suffragette City. There's a part where it ends and it's like,
I thought that was just like a southern thing.
No, no, it's like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Suffragette today. No? Oh, for God's sakes.
Don't try out for a Canadian Idol, honey bun.
I already did and I failed, okay?
But yeah, so.
I can sing better than that, okay, by the way?
You're like, I only did that for comedic purposes.
Exactly. Exactly. God, we are way off now. Sorry, we just had to throw out, because we're going into some more sad shit. So we're here comes the comedy.
Again. So yeah. Let's have a little lighthearted moment. We deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the funniest part of the whole episode is when she awkwardly turns around and goes back for that orange.
Well, of course, you're going to want the orange. Like, she's probably never going to have one until she returns to, you know. And even then, yeah, they probably I didn't.
I take that shit too, man. Oranges are delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially Florida oranges.
God, that was an awful joke.
What?
I said the orange was almost worth it.
Oh, man. I was about to. I was about to say a goddamn joke. Yeah, so. Florida oranges are definitely the best, and it's the only good thing to ever come out of Florida.
I like cuties and halos.
Oh, for God's sakes, Gracie, you just cut me off all the time. Sick of your shit. I'm sorry. I'm kidding.
You
I'm kidding.
You love me.
I know I do love you.
Okay.
I know my jokes aren't funny, but like, God.
Yeah, we're horrible joke people. We think our jokes are funny, but we're about the only one that thinks they're funny.
If you think our jokes are funny, then you can email us at wedonotcare@gmail.com. I'm sorry. That's so stupid.
Okay.
I need a drink after
Time
this.
Time to stop laughing now.
Aw. The best part. Everybody. Okay. Okay. So let's get back to the serious stuff. Okay, so Jamie returns, and the thing I have to say, which this is probably going to derive into the, kind of funny, even though it's, yeah, okay.
Even though it's super serious.
No, but, like, I have to mention this. Okay, do you know in the movie, Jane Eyre, right?
Yes.
Okay, Michael, beard. Yes, Jamie had a freaking pube beard.
You know what was so interesting is that beard made him look 40 years old. Like, I know that Sam Heughan is like 34, I think.
But made him look a lot older with his
dude. It made
red
him
pure,
look so old. It's just like the guy that plays Tormund from Game of Thrones. Like, he shaved off his beard. He looked like he lost 20 years of his life, you know?
Yeah, so he looked a lot like. I don't think he looks good with a beard, you know?
Unfortunately, in later episode, like in later books, doesn't he end up growing one out? Maybe they'll skip that part.
Maybe they'll, like, put a fake one on that looks a little bit less pew beard. I'm sorry.
Well, that actually looks... I mean, the beard was all right, but he looked so much older. So I guess that'll work out great for when they do, if the show continues on, because, I mean...
Well, they're a lot older. I mean, you know, he's supposed to be, like, well, in his 40s by that point, so I guess it will kind of work.
Yeah, then it'll work out great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so this whole scene... Oh, man...
Yeah, this is another.
There went my good vibe. It just left me, like, my soul.
Jesus.
So Claire and Jamie finally have a talk. And
they're talking about faith.
Yeah, she begins talking about her baby. And there's a flashback scene to where she's still, you know, has this high fever and talks about how Mother Hildegard was, you know,
reluctant to give her the child, but she was insistent on wanting to see the baby.
Yeah, where she didn't have to imagine it. She knew what it looked like and everything. And then she goes through describing it. And the interesting thing about this episode, the composition, I mean, not this episode, but the interesting thing about the composition of this scene was how it was just silent. Like, there was music in a lot of the whole episode to set the tone. There's no music in this part. There's just the incessant ticking of a clock as she's telling Jamie this story. And we end up seeing Louise come into the picture. And, you know, like, last week, Louise was kind of a bitch. She totally made up for it this episode.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're going to see her again in this season, if ever, which is sad.
Because... Now, what happens is Louise says to Mother Hildegard, how long has this been going on? Mother Hildegard says it's been like this all day. And
for hours.
And it's because Claire is sitting there with the baby in her chair, in her hands, just rocking it and, you know, kissing it and singing it to it. And the baby is, it's dead.
Yeah, it's awful. And you can see Louise kind of clutch her stomach, you know?
Yeah.
And, oh man, it's bad. Oh, God. But Louise ends up being the one to help Claire, you know, finally
say goodbye.
Exactly. So just holds her tight after it's over and, you know, puts covers on her and, you know, basically, like, tucks her in. And, man, it's just so bad. I was already crying again at this point. Like, man.
She was essentially saying goodbye to her child.
Forever. Yeah, there's just, again, I couldn't imagine that kind of pain, and I hope I never have to go through it. I couldn't imagine having to go through that.
No, but, me either.
Jamie, after it's all over, you know, well, Claire, after she explains everything, you think that she's about to lay into Jamie and tell him what a horrible person he is, but then instead of blaming him, she blames herself. She blames herself for not taking better care of herself, for going into the woods and watching the duel, and, you know, and Jamie's just so struck by it, and he says his line from the book, essentially. I mean, it's a little different, but, you know, he said basically that, you know, what you don't know is I've already forgiven you for everything you have done and anything you ever will do. So.
Dear God. Well, that's after.
That's a love right there.
Did he say that after she told him that she slept with the king to save him?
No, that was before. And then she said, there's one more thing. Mm-hmm. Or maybe she did say it afterward, or say it before he told her that, but. You know, he didn't, in the books it was different. Like, he got really mad in the books for a minute. You know, I remember the nettles, you know, that scene was in the book quite differently, but, I think ultimately it still,
what do you mean the nettles?
Like, I think they were like on this, they were basically just got off the ship or something and she confessed it and, like, he grabs nettles and starts, like, beating her breasts with them because he's so pissed. I can't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened. And I'm, like, but then they end up, you know, doing the whole forgiveness speech in a different way. Something like that.
But
it was different in the books. But I think it's just as poignant here as it is in the books when he, you know, explains to her that it doesn't matter what you do, I still love you. And then they reconcile, and he tells her, you know, the only thing that we can do is carry it with us, you know, that's something we can never let go of. God, I mean, Jamie's only in this episode 5 minutes, and you feel like he's been in there the whole hour.
Yeah. So she says that, we should go back to Scotland. And he says that we have to do something first. And that's when we go into the scene where they're at the grave of Faith Fraser. And Jamie puts the christening spoon with the baby on the little tombstone.
And he says, you know, if we have to leave you here in France, at least we can leave a piece of Scotland with you. Because he leaves St. Andrew, who's the patron saint of Scotland. And that's pretty much where the episode ends, with them clutching their hands together, kneeling by their daughter's grave.
And grieving together.
Yeah.
It was a rough episode.
It was a rough episode. There's just no getting around that shit. Hopefully we get a few laughs next episode. But like I said, big shout out to Tony Graffia for doing such a fantastic job writing this episode.
Yes.
She did say in the little thing that, you know, in the little blurb after the episode that there was actually a voiceover when Claire was singing to the baby, but they decided to cut that out, which I think worked perfectly because the voiceover kind of would have taken away from that
moment,
you know, whole moment. But yeah, kudos to her because, you know, she should write more episodes, and Richard Cahan should write more episodes. Yeah. Oh boy, I could cry right now.
Yeah, it was. I said it so once, I'll say it again.
That was the episode. No real good laughs, except when we were doing dumb jokes.
Yeah, no kidding. We needed it, okay?
We did. It's our coping mechanism, making stupid ass jokes that make no sense. Yeah. Next week, it looks like we're going back to Scotland, which will be nice.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that because
I miss Scotland. So I'll be glad to see, you know, Lard Bucket and whatever Murtaugh said their names were.
Yeah. Well,
big,
yeah, because there's
Big Head and Lard Bucket, or something like that.
Yeah, because there's gonna be there's gonna be more characters and stuff to.
Yeah, we're gonna see Simon Fraser, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So that's
he's gonna be there. We're gonna see all our old favorites. We're probably gonna see Dougal and Colum, and well, they're not favorites, but we're gonna see them. definitely gonna see Angus and Rupert and probably Willie, and you know, it'll be nice. Maybe Mrs. Spitz. It'll be nice to see all those lovely faces again, because what we failed to mention earlier was that the king was going to speak on behalf of Jamie to get him a pardon so that they could go back to Scotland without him having a price on his head.
Mm-hmm.
So that works out great for them. So so we're going back to Scotland next week. Thank God.
Yeah, no kidding.
France. I mean, I love France, but I'm glad we're moving away from it. And now we're going to be focusing on the fact that, you know, despite their efforts, they did not manage to stop Bonnie Prince Charlie from raising money. So
yeah.
That was in the blurb for the new episode, so don't get mad at me for saying, you know, that, because that was in the blurb.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly.
So I guess we'll close this up.
I want to send some, okay, because I'm kind of obsessed with seeing where everybody's, like, checking out our podcast around the world. I think it's, I'm just like, oh my God, this is so cool. So I want to say a few thank yous to the people who are listening to our podcast. There's somebody in San Jose who played our episode, or played, I guess, three episodes, but who listened three times, or three different people. I don't know. We're popular there, I guess. People, we have somebody in New York. We've got somebody in Atlanta, Georgia, Tennessee, Wichita. Hello, Wichita. We love you. we love all you. God, I sound so ridiculous. But also
we
Los Angeles.
We love y'all.
We love y'all.
My big old country accent.
San Francisco. A lot of visitors from all over the world. Also in Australia, we had three plays in Melbourne. So whoever is listening there, hello. It's nice to meet you. Also in Adelaide. So it's nice to meet you as well. I think this is so cool. One play in Montreal, Canada. So my mom is apparently not listening to these podcasts, because she is definitely not in Montreal, and, I'm a little bit disappointed in her. But yeah, the person.
Well, it's a good thing she didn't listen to last week's episode.
Yeah, I pretty much made fun of her. But yeah, hello, Montreal. Few other places, we've got, Sweden, Finland, that's Germany, I guess. Yeah, it's Germany. And then, I don't know where that is. Okay, wait. Oh, somebody listened in Athens, Greece. So.
Oh, nice.
I know. I'm a little bit obsessed. I'm like, oh my God, people are listening to us. I think it's the coolest. So yeah, tell all your friends. Oh my God, did we get one play in, no, we didn't. I thought we got a play in Hawaii. I almost got excited. Don't mind me.
But yeah, so, we will definitely see you guys next week. Let me go through our little list. We have our Tumblr, outlandersassenach.tumblr.com. We have our blog spot, which is outlandersassenach.blogspot.com. And we have our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/outlandersassenachepage, all one word. Also thank you guys for who bought the t-shirts.
Oh yes.
I did not reach my goal, but we were able to sell enough that they were going to print them. So if you did order a t-shirt, it will be coming in the mail within the next couple of weeks if you have not got it already. So I guess that's it.
How much did you sell?
it's rather pitiful, actually. Aww. Only six.
Still, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so I sold six. We might do that again, but with a different design. We'll see. We'll see how that works out. So I guess we'll just wrap this up then. And
yeah, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We'll see you guys next week.
Yep, definitely. I'm Gracie.
And I'm Ajaleen.
And see you guys next week.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye.